Drishtva seen Striyam, a woman, Devamayam, whose form is created by the illusory energy of the Lord. Tatpavahai, by the alluring seductive activities of the woman. Ajita, one who is not controlled. Indriyaha, his senses. Pralobhitaha, enticed. Patati, falls down. Ande,
into the blindness of ignorance.
Tamasi, into the darkness of hell. Agnau, in the fire. Patangavat, just like the moth. It's a translation. One who has failed to control his senses immediately feels attraction upon seeing a woman's form, which is created by the illusory energy of the Supreme Lord. Indeed, when a woman speaks with enticing words, smiles coquettishly, and moves her body sensuously, his mind is immediately captured, and thus he falls blindly into the darkness of material existence, just as the moth, maddened by the fire, rushes blindly into its flames. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda Ki Jai. Hey, it's Bhushaya. I recognize you from the old days. So Śrīla Śrīdhara Swāmī explains in this regard that just as a moth is killed by its attraction to the form of fire, similarly a bee can easily be killed by exploiting its attraction to the fragrance of flowers. Furthermore, hunters may trap and kill an elephant by exploiting its sensuous desire to touch a captive female elephant, and may also kill a deer by attracting it with the sounds of their horns. And the fish is killed by its desire to taste the bait on a hook. Thus, one who desires to learn detachment from material illusion should accept these five helpless creatures as guru and learn the needful. Certainly, one who is lusty to enjoy the illusory form of a woman will be quickly buried in a material illusion. Of the five types of fatal attraction involving material sense objects, the lesson of rupa, or form, is illustrated in this verse. Okay. So, drishtva striyam deva mayam tad bhavair ajitendriyaha pralobhita patatyonde tamas yagnau patanga vat. So, omagana timiranda shah Kananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Miritam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So, Prahlad Maharaj says, what Matir Nakrishne Pato Pitova Pito Vitpadye Tagraha Vratanam Adanda Gopir Vishatam Tamishram Punak Punas Char Vitachar Vananam. That one whose mind is not on Krishna, Matir Nakrishne, and parato svatova, and other things. And he's taken a vow to enjoy the senses, graha vratanam. It's an interesting statement. Also could be understood in different ways, or to remain in his house, you know. So, graha vratanam, ananda gopir. He has uncontrolled senses, and he enters into ignorance, and then what does he do? Punak punas char vitachar vananam, or as Prabhupada says so succinctly, he chews the already chewed. So the example I use sometimes in that regard is someone who has bubble gum or chewing gum and chews all the sugar out and he just keeps chewing it. Or like sometimes people, it's like taking a piece of chewing gum that someone has stuck under the seat and putting it back in your mouth. I remember when I was old, I used to ride the buses, and sometimes you'd sit on the bus and there'd be some chewing gum on the seat. So I never thought of putting it in my mouth again and trying to chew it. And actually, when the chewing gum loses its taste, generally you spit it out. So,
This is Rishi Kesh from El Salvador. He has to leave to go home now. Be a Krishna Maharaj, UBC.
Hasta luego. Hasta luego. Buen viaje. El Salvador. So, mucho gusto. Hasta la vista. That's the Terminator. All right. So, anyway, so, in other words, we keep doing the same thing, hoping there'll be some enjoyment. There was one great sage, his name was Einstein. He said, insanity means to keep doing the same thing and think you're going to get a different result, right? Mm-hmm. So that's, we're pretty insane. Nunam pramata, another verse is, nunam pramata kurate vikarma, yad indriya priti apinoti. That's from Lord Rishavade's statements. Nunam pramata kurate vikarma. And one who thinks, Yadindriya Pritya, whose senses, or material senses, are very dear to him, Priya, Aparinoti, then he's mad. Mad, like Prabhupada would often say, like, who is crazy? And we say, of course, that those who are engaged or interested in satisfying the senses are crazy. Just like yesterday, we were talking to one such crazy person. And, he was a tantric. I don't know, any of you know what a tantric is? Tantra, actually, the word tantra means to connect. It's not a bad thing. And, you know, we have our Vaishnava tantra too. But there is left-handed and right-handed tantra. Like the Narada Pantratra, it's tantra. It's a tantric literature. Because it connects one, when, you know, it gives you instructions on devotional service, deity worship, and everything like that. But that's right-handed tantra. It's interesting, you have this expression in Sanskrit, you know, left and right. Like you have right-handed gopis and left-handed gopis. And right-handed gopis are the ones who are submissive, like Chandravali, and of course Krishna's wife in Dwarka, Rukmini. And the left-handed gopis and wives are ones that are unsubmissive, like Srimati Radharani. And of course in Dwarka you have Satya Vama. You understand? Vama. Vama means like left-handed. You understand? That's why she's called Satya Vama.
Vama means left.
Yeah, left. Because, what? Isn't it? Vama. So, left-handed. So, because they're unsubmissive. Something that in the material world is not desirable. It's not desirable to have a girlfriend or a wife who's unsubmissive. In fact, Chanaka Pandit says, Aranyatena gantavyam yata aranyam yata graham. That if you do have a wife or girlfriend who's unsubmissive, what? Go to the forest. So, but in the spiritual world, which is, you know, the original form of this material world, in which this material world is a perverted reflection, then unsubmissiveness is higher than submissiveness. Isn't that nice? You know, that's it. What? Let's go there. So, anyway, so nunam pramata kuru devika. So, anyway, so yadindriya pritya. So, one whose senses are very dear to them, or sensory satisfaction is very dear, then their pramada, which Prabhupada describes as more mad or more an illusion. It's very interesting. Nunam pramata kuru devikarma. And then one executes activities that are vikarmic. So as this verse talks about, the main point is to control the senses or else one will engage in vikarmic activities and will be, as Prabhupada said, who is crazy? You know, that people who are engaged or think the senses are very dear are crazy. So anyway, we're talking about this tantric guy, which is interesting. We met yesterday, he was talking about how by fully engaging the senses, and basically sense gratification, under the jurisdiction of tantra, you know, this left-handed tantra, then one can become self-realized, which is a bunch of nonsense. Because one becomes more fully immersed in the bodily conception of life by these left-handed tantric activities. In fact, If he really wanted to execute left-handed tantra, there's five regulated principles in left-handed tantra. Did you know about this? It's called Pancha Makara. The we have our four regulated principles. What are they? No illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, and no meat eating, or fish, or eggs, or water vegetables like fish. Or, actually, it's interesting, in India, they call eggs sometimes the fruit of the chicken. It's vegetarian because it's fruit. You know, it just comes from a chicken. So, or the fish are vegetarian because they're just water vegetables. They swim a little bit, but a little more than seaweed does, but they swim. A note from your sponsor, from your boss. So anyway, so getting back to the tantra thing. So they have five regulated principles. And pretty much these regulated principles are the opposite of us, with one added one. They've added one. Let's see if I can remember them all. Pancha Makara. So there's matcha, which means, does anyone know what matcha means?
Fish.
You have to eat fish. Then there's mada, which means intoxication, taking intoxication. There's mangsa. What does that mean? Meat. There's maitunya. What does maitunya mean?
Death.
No, maitunya. You should know. Maitunya means sex, illicit sex. And finally, there's mudra. And I'll explain what that means. Mudra means that they have to use obscene mudras. I think you know what that means. Like, in America, we call that flipping the birdie. You don't know what that means. No, you don't know it. Thank God none of you know what that means. You're all innocent persons. Yeah, so it means obscene gestures, basically, obscene mudras. They have to use obscene mudras. Maitunya means, of course, not only sex life, but it means the most obnoxious type of sex life. You know, I guess child abuse and things like that, and anything, you know, kinky, as we would say. And, you know, drinking liquor, all these things. So these are actually regulated principles. In addition, they do wonderful things like eating their food out of the skull. It's nice, isn't it? Where's your plate today? Where's your plate for prasadam? Someone comes to the Sunday feast with a skull. And they eat out of the skull. So in this way, they're thinking they're going to become self-realized and make the body strong and become self-realized. All these systems of so-called yoga nowadays, they're just like so much of a concoction. Not that every yoga system promotes that. And that, you know, they have all these bogus yogas, like bogus yogis and yoga systems. Like yesterday we were talking about one yoga system it's called Bikram Yoga, where they turn up the heat to about 110 degrees and everyone's doing yoga. Anyone's heard of this before? Most famous, most wealthy person in the yoga system. I mean, you've got all these different concoctions, whereas Patanjali, he simply had one or two postures. All these other postures, you know, they're just invented recently, whether you're following the system of Iyengar or following the system of Yogananda or whatever system you're following. They're all modern inventions. Whereas Patanjali, he says the purpose of yoga is to control the senses. And ultimately, Ishvara, to worship Ishvara or God. Of course, he doesn't really define who God is, but at least he says God. So it's basically a theistic system, the original yoga system. You know, yam, niyam, asana, pranayama, pratyahara, dharana, dhyana, samadhi. Oh, there's our best Prabhupada Nuga. We relish his associating. He has all these stories about Prabhupada. Connects one with Prabhupada. So, I was wondering where you were. So, anyway, so all these systems, they're really there's no bona fide sampradaya coming down. It's just they started somewhere 100 years ago, 200 years ago. Dhanyavad. And basically, they don't teach the basic philosophy of Krishna consciousness, even the basic ABC stuff, that you're not the body. You know, how are you going to become self-realized by engaging the senses and their sense objects? I mean, it just bewilders me. It's like we were talking yesterday about how we're all living in this illusory world like a matrix. Many of you have seen this movie. Where everyone is in virtual reality. And nowadays, of course, the virtual reality becomes even more pronounced, or even different levels of virtual reality as people are entering into the computer virtual reality. There was we were talking about yesterday, this thing about what's called singularity. That's a word that you can use to impress people. That means where the machine and the man become one. You understand? Like the computers and us, we just become one. It's basically like the Matrix type of thing. Or where the computers become as intelligent or more intelligent than us, which is not that hard in modern society. The computers becoming more intelligent because they probably are already. So people want to enter into an illusion within an illusion. Many years ago when I was young, that meant taking drugs. Like Prabhupada said that about marijuana and LSD. He says, they're in an illusion within an illusion. It's bad enough they're in an illusion, but they're in an illusion within an illusion. Because when they would take LSD, they would think or see so many different things. And nowadays, the modern version of that is the computer virtual reality. And you have people living in virtual, like, computer worlds. As I was explaining to the devotees the other day, there's this one world on the computer called Second Life. I don't know if any of you have heard about that before. But it's a world where there's 12 million people living at any one time. They're all connected to their computers. They're living there. There's even a Hare Krishna temple there. One time I went in there just to see what it was like. And I found the Hare Krishna temple, and I found one of my disciples there. You know, and this disciple, some of you may have met him. His name is Gopal. He's a little short. So inside this Second Life, he was like 6 feet tall and handsome, you know, real dapper ladies man in the temple, in the Hare Krishna temple. So it's basically, and in this virtual world, of course, you had powers that you didn't have in the material world, in the gross material world. You could jump from one place to another. And there's like 12 million people living in there, and they even have their own currency, and you can exchange your real dollars for the virtual dollars and live your whole life in this world. So that's an illusion within illusion. But even without that, we're in an illusion because we're thinking the body, you know, the soul is basically seated in the chariot of the body, as we know from the Bhagavad Gita metaphor. And then you have the horses, which are the senses, the five senses, the pancha indriya. And then you have the reins, which are the mind, which is the sixth sense, balashakshtani indriyani, prakritishtani karshati. And then after that, you have the intelligence, which is supposed to be the driver, and the soul is the passenger. This is a typical example that given in the Vedic literatures, which Srila Prabhupada also gave. And the passenger is far removed from the senses. I mean, you see there's actually like several steps between the passenger and the senses, right? There's the passenger, the driver, the reins, and then the horses, which are the senses. So even using that metaphor, the passenger is far removed from the senses. What to speak of scientifically, if we see how much the soul, let's say analyze it in a physiological sense, how much the soul is separated from the senses, because let's take these senses, let's take the sense of touch, for example. So you touch something, And there's the nerves and, of course, the blood, which carries the consciousness, according to the Vedic literatures. The nerve transmits its impulse through the nervous system, through the spine, up to the brain. And then somehow or other goes to one part of the brain. And then somehow or other that's transmitted to the heart region where the soul is seated. And so it's such an indirect experience. But because of our false identification, we're thinking that we're experiencing. It's because of our attachment and false identification. Now, what do I mean? Let me give a practical example of how that works. Let's say you go and watch a movie, and you're really attached and absorbed in the movie. You will actually feel different symptoms as things occur on the screen of the movie. Or even something that's more common even than a movie is that many times I'm walking through the airports because I fly a lot, and I see there's these sports bars. You know what a sports bar is? That means where people drink liquor and they watch sporting games. And as they're watching sporting games and the gorillas on the screen, I'm sorry, those are football players, common language, but the gorillas are attacking each other and the people who are watching are going through the same motions. Like that. I mean, it's quite interesting to watch people watching sporting games. You should do that sometimes. Not to watch the sporting games. But even you catch yourself, if you start watching, you start getting into it. Like that. So you can get into this illusion because of this attachment or this contemplation of the senses. As we know, Krishna says in the second chapter of the Gita, Jayato Vishakumsam Sangastesha Bajayate, Sangat Sanjayate Kama, Kama Kurota Bajayate. One becomes attached and then loses one's intelligence. And angry, of course, comes about. And then loses one's intelligence and one falls down ultimately into the material whirlpool. So you see how this process of attachment leads to identification. And that occurs with sporting games, it occurs with anything you contemplate, with your home, of course, ultimately with the body, with the mind, with your conceptions of life. All these things you develop a deep, not only attachment to, but identification with. So that's really the point. So that's why, I mean, getting back to the point, that's why engaging the senses materially with their sense objects will not get you out of the material world. It'll get you more identifying with things of this world. I mean, that's why we have these four regulative principles. You know, sometimes people say to me, why did you pick these four regulative principles? Why don't you pick something easy? Like, you know, no mushrooms or, you know, something really easy. Or no beets. For me, that's easy. I hate beets. Anyway, so, you know, why'd you pick the things that are most dear to us? Well, there's reasons for those four regulative principles. I mean, there's karmic reasons, like in the case of meat, fish, and eggs, you know, because it's very heavy karma. And also, there's psychological reasons. There's modal reasons in terms of the three modes of nature. I mean, let's take sex life, which is what's being discussed here. I mean, sex life is actually in the mode of ignorance. Now, you may think it's passion, but it's passion to plan for it. You know, if you're planning to go out on a date or something, or to go on your prom, it's like I saw a picture of Barack Obama on his prom. It was in the newspaper the other day. Anyway, it was actually quite funny. So, if you're planning for some, you know, sexual thing, then that's actually impassioned. But the engagement itself is an ignorance. So it puts one. So from passion comes ignorance. From passion comes ignorance. So it puts one in the mode of ignorance. That's why we prohibit illicit sex life. Simple. You know, psychologically, physiologically. It puts one in ignorance. Because what? Nunam pramata, kurute vikarmi, yadindriya priti aparnoti. because you become absorbed in your senses, perhaps more than any other activity, you become absorbed in your senses. And therefore, when you're absorbed in your senses, that's ignorance. And when it's ignorance, then you're ignorant of your real spiritual identity. That's why it's called ignorance. Right? I mean, passion is a little bit more like, you know, like Krishna gives the example, like like smoke that covers a fire, or a baby in the womb is ignorance. You understand? It's just like, it's ignorant. So therefore, that's why we prohibit illicit sex life, and also intoxication. Of course, intoxication is an ignorance too. Gambling also. People become so crazy that they gamble away all their money, and finally, outside of the Las Vegas casinos, or inside the casinos, they actually have a notary public so you can sign your car away. Did you know that? You can actually sign your car away and then you have to leave on the Greyhound bus. They have to lend you money to take a Greyhound bus out of Las Vegas. Or, whoops, someone should get that.
That's confirmed, huh?
That's confirmed. Or investing, sometimes people who invest in the stock market without, I mean, just as a gambling thing. I'm not saying investing in the stock market is necessarily gambling, because if you're doing it with knowledge of the particular company you're investing, it's an investment. But if you're just using some scheme for investing, like people go to Las Vegas and they have different schemes with a roulette wheel, or different schemes with other different card games, then that's gambling. So it puts you in ignorance. I mean, just forget about your identity. Just like there's people who die at the gambling machines, or people who die playing video games. People actually forget to eat and sleep or drink, and they get dehydrated as they're playing video games or playing the one-armed bandit. They even call it a bandit. Isn't it that machine? One-armed bandit. Slot machine. So anyway, these things put you in ignorance. So we have to avoid activities that put us in ignorance. The four regulated principles. And this is what's mentioned here. And it's interesting that those same activities are the most attractive activities in the material world. You know, why does Krishna arrange it like that? You know, isn't he intelligent enough? Why doesn't he arrange that the activities that put us in ignorance smell bad and look bad? So we're not attracted to them. But there's a reason why they're the most attractive. And the reason is that, especially with the sex life, is that that's the highest thing in the spiritual world. And the material world is the reflection, upside-down reflection, or as Krishna describes in the Gita, it's like the reflection of a banyan tree on water. You're standing on the bank, and the leaves are going down, and the branches are going up. I mean, and the roots are going up, sorry. And the roots are going up. That's why this attraction between men and women, which is specifically what's being described here in this verse, that's why that's the most attractive thing. Because in the spiritual world, the most attractive thing is the attraction between Radha and Krishna. Right? I mean, Krishna loses his mind practically thinking of Radharani.
Now them too.
But that's Yogamaya. And Radharani loses, you know, she simply losing her mind thinking about Krishna. This is called Divyon Mada, transcendental madness. This is like Lord Chaitanya was in the mood of Srimati Radharani. Is Krishna in the mood of Srimati Radharani? So he exhibited transcendental symptoms of madness. These are called the Vyabhachari Bhavas. If we look at the emotions being exhibited in the spiritual world, they're actually analyzed by the acharyas. You know, there's the anubhavas. Of course, first we could start with the vibhavas. Vibhava means that which excites you. Which, you know, it's something that stimulates your emotion, basically. I mean, for example, let's say if you're a mother. Let's say you're my mother. When my mother sees my baby shoes which were bronzed, like, 64 years ago, she starts crying. You know, we're trying to explain the bhavas in material, using material examples. She starts crying because it stimulates. That's so amongst the vibhavas, there's alambana and udipana, which means, alambana means the direct thing that you're attached to, and udipana means something that reminds you of it. So when she sees me, she cries a little bit, because I don't listen to her. And when she sees my shoes, she cries. So that's an alambana and udipana. That means directly the object, or things that remind you of the object. Or for example, let's take a Krishna thing, which is much more interesting than my mother. Let's take you see a peacock feather, like that devotee Mukunda. He was giving medical advice to the Nawab, that means the Muslim, and he saw the Nawab was being fanned by a peacock feather, a peacock fan, and he fainted. So that peacock fan with the peacock feathers in it stimulated his emotion. Why? Because Krishna wears a peacock feather, right? Krishna wears a peacock feather. So that's a vibhava. You know, something that stimulates. So just like the prayer by Narottama Das Thakur, Goranga Balite Habi Pulaka Sharia. When I hear the name, when will it be when I hear the name of Goranga Pulaka Sharia, will all the hairs of my body stand on end? So that, you know, just Goranga, that's also a vibhava. You understand the name? It stimulates me. Oh, Goranga. You know, we hear the name, it doesn't stimulate anything. We hear Bhagavatam class and we go to sleep. Right? That stimulates our sleeping glands, you know, the pineal glands. It causes us to go to sleep. Like it's described, all inauspicious things in the heart become diminished almost to nil. So the inauspicious things were keeping us from resting properly. So when we diminish these inauspicious things, then we feel very peaceful. No more in anxiety. We can sleep during Bhagavatam class. So anyway, there's Vibhava and then Anubhava. That means what follows, the bhavas that follow. There's Ashtashatvaka Bhava, the eightfold bhavas, like, you know, foaming at the mouth and things like that. And finally, the Vabhachari Bhavas. Of course, Stai Bhava is something different. That means you're constitutional, emotional. Emotion connected with your rasa. So, but the Vabhachari Bhavas, there's 33 of them, and they're uncontrollable and intermittent. What do I mean by that? Let's say Lord Chaitanya, when he was in the Gambira at night, and he would sometimes hit his head against the floor or against the walls because the devotees wouldn't let him get out. And when he got out, of course, sometimes he jumped into the ocean and the fishermen had to bring him back. You know that story? Therefore, they had to have one devotee just like stay there with Lord Chaitanya all the time, stay awake all night long with Lord Chaitanya, prevent those emotions from being, hurting Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Those are called, those are the Vyabhachari Bhavas. Or Srila Prabhupada, very rarely he would exhibit them. When he went to Miami one time and he saw a Gaura-Tai, he fell into a trance. And for several minutes, the devotees didn't know what to do. That's called, that's a Vyabhachari Bhava, one of the 33. They're analyzed by Srila Rupa Goswami and Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur. So this is craziness. It's transcendental craziness, isn't it? It's insanity. So the reason, I'm giving the reason that attachment to sense objects makes us so insane in the material world is because they make people insane in the spiritual world. But the difference is, the insanity in the spiritual world is pure bliss. Even the misery is bliss. You know, the separation. Yugayatam nimishena chakshusha pravashayatam. Shunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Govinda, Krishna, feeling your separation is considering a moment like a yuga. actually, it's not just 12 years or more, according to the literal translation, it's yugaitam, a whole yuga, you know, divi yuga. You know, it's just like millions of years, a moment's separation, even blinking my eyes for a second, the gopis are thinking, is painful. And they're cursing Lord Brahma for creating the eyes, and they're becoming envious of the fish who have unblinking eyes. Isn't it? It's interesting, isn't it? I mean, that's pretty insane. I mean, imagine if a boyfriend said to his girlfriend, you know, when I blink my eyes, I'm feeling pain because I can't see you. That would be so romantic, but she wouldn't believe it. Can you imagine?
How, in the beginning, they believe it.
They believe any damn thing. That's because when people fall in love, according to the scientists, it's like snorting cocaine, like the brain scan looks exactly the same. You lose your brain. Whereas that song goes, when the moon hits your eye like a big pizza pie, that's amore. But the reason for that is because the original form of that in the spiritual world has the same effect. But the difference is the pleasure increases exponentially in the spiritual world, or unlimitedly, not even exponentially, unlimitedly, you know, infinitely, at an infinite rate, whereas in the material world it gets dry after some time. Because people have these expectations of this loving affair in the material world, and it doesn't live up to the expectations. And one of the reasons so many marriages break up nowadays is people watch these movies and it gives them unrealistic expectations. Mm-hmm. Especially in India, they have these Bollywood movies. Mm-hmm. And it's just like so romantic that people get together and a whole bunch of dancers dance around you. Or in America they say, live happily ever after. So people have these unrealistic expectations, and then when they finally do get married, they discover it's not like that. It's not like that. It's like, I mean, one time I was joking and I was giving a class in Fiji. I said, they think it's like some Bollywood movie. Instead, it becomes like the Mahabharata war instead of a Bollywood movie. So the point is, in the material world, the pleasures have a beginning and an end. And as Krishna says, so the wise don't delight in them. So you understand, when you think of a pleasure in the material world, you think it not only does it have an end, but it will further entangle me in this material world. I will become further attached by these things. You know, you project yourself in the future. You say, well, if I give in to my senses, what will happen? I mean, like sometimes, let's say with myself, because everybody knows I changed my diet. It's a real strict, you know, diet to help protect my health. So sometimes I'll look at something, some other food that I don't eat anymore, like a pizza or something. And it's attractive. But then I just think, what if I get into it? Then I can think of the diseases I'll get. You know, heart disease, cancer, everything like that. I don't want to frighten everybody away from eating pizza. But anyway, just a practical thing, the way my mind works. I project myself. So that's why Krishna says these pleasures have a beginning and an end, and the wise man does not delight in them. So you engage in illicit life, it's like happiness in the beginning, isn't it? And poison, Krishna also says in the beginning, poison at the end. Whereas the transcendental happiness, because of controlling the senses, it appears to be like poison in the beginning, or it even feels like poison in the beginning, and then it's like nectar at the end. So that's how you have to think. This is attractive to me, but if I do it, I'm going to suffer. And this is not attractive to me, but if I do it, I'm going to enjoy. Think about that. You know, this doesn't really attract me right now, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, sitting down, chanting 16 rounds, sitting for Bhagavatam class, not engaged in romantic affairs anymore, even though as a playboy, I wasn't, of course, but, you know, someone could think like that. I'm just taking a hypothetical. But I will enjoy like crazy in the end. Brahma Shokir Twanantam, as Lord Rishabhadev says. He says, Nayam Deho Deha Bajavi Loke Kashtam Kamam Arhite Vibhujam Ye Tapo Divyam Bhutrukayena Satvam Shudyad Yasmad Brahma Shokya Twanantam. An important verse. He's instructing his sons. He says, my dear sons, you've taken a human body. So the point is in the human body. The human body can think, the people can think of the future. What are the future repercussions of a particular act, right? Animals don't think about the future repercussions. You know, they the typical things. A dog sees something, either passes urine on it or has sex with it or eats it. Or, you know, kisses it like the human being to get what he wants. But it's not that he's planning for the future. You know, he may bury a bone to plan for the future a little bit. But not really like a human being, you know, like putting money away in his retirement account or anything like that. So, but we should plan for the future. And Lord Vishabhadev says, Nayam deho deha vajam reloke. We shouldn't be like the vidbhujam ye, the pigs, or literally the stool eaters in that verse. And we should tapo divyam. We should engage in austerity. And the austerity means to think of what's going to be in the future. That's the intelligence platform. To plan for the future. To plan for the future for Krishna consciousness, for higher happiness. And then he says, Brahma Shokya Twanantam. In this way, we can enjoy unlimited happiness. So that's really what we want, unlimited happiness. Whereas the contact with the senses and the sense objects, they're sources of misery. I mean, just like the Prashanam prayer. Everybody knows the Prashanam prayer? Sarira Vijaya. Nobody knows it in English anymore. We used to say it in English. Nobody says it in English anymore. They always say that. It was funny, I was actually asking the devotees as I travel around the world what the translation is. I mean, the older devotees all know. But the newer devotees, I was asking them, and nobody knew. I said, you're saying this every day. I mean, what is this? You're just doing nimagraha, rituals. Oh, Lord, this material body is a place of ignorance. And the senses are networks of paths leading to death. Whew. And of all the senses, which one is the most voracious and in control? The tongue was voracious. And you, Lord Krishna, are so very kind. You know, anyway, you all know the translation, hopefully. So we should say it in English rather than just in Sanskrit. You know, too many times we get into the ritualistic consciousness of saying things in Sanskrit and we don't even know what we're saying. We could be saying, you know, I worship you, Ma Durga, and we wouldn't even know it. Isn't it? Yeah. I mean, I could give someone a mantra and say, I worship you, Durga Ma, and Indra, and everybody would keep chanting it, you know, for the next 10 years. It's a blind following, Prabhupada said. So, yes, that's the point. We should be thinking of the future. And Brahma Shokya Twanantam, unlimited happiness. That's what your rightful inheritance is. There's that story in the teachings of Lord Chaitanya about, you know, your father has left you some wealth. You have to know where to dig from it. You know, one place is a poisonous snake. And I don't remember all the details of it. But you have to know where to dig for the wealth. And that wealth is in Krishna consciousness, not in the contact of the senses with their sense objects. And we don't want to become left-handed tantrics. So anyway, some questions. Any questions about or comments about this? Yeah.
Earlier, you said left-handed, that somebody coughed, and I thought you might
have said,
did you say Radharani is left-handed?
Radharani is left, she's not a tantric, she's a left-handed gopi, yeah. Yeah. So usually left-handed means something that's not so pleasing, or, you know, something that's different than the ordinary course of events. You know, something that's a deviation. Like I said, if someone's wife is left-handed, that means an unsubmissive wife. And Chanaka Pandit says, head for the hills. Isn't it? Aranyatena gantavyam yata aranyam yata agraham. He says, apriyavadana. If your wife is speaking unpleasing words, go to the forest. Aranyatena gantavyam yata aranyam yata graham, because already your house is like a forest. That's literally what it means. So you're already in the forest in your house, so you might as well go to the actual forest. So anyway, so that, but in the material world, if something's left-handed, that's not ordinary. That's not good. But in the spiritual world, it's actually higher. Just like in the spiritual world, this relationship, the lawless love between Radha and Krishna, the unmarried relationship between Radha and Krishna is the highest. And then a little lower than that is the relationship between Krishna and his wives. Right? And not lower in a material sense. I mean, not as exalted. Let's say, I don't want to use the word lower, because nothing's low in the spiritual world. But, so in the material world, whatever is the lowest, that corresponds to the highest in the spiritual world. I mean, even you have intoxication in the spiritual world. I mean, Balaram is getting intoxicated, right? And actually, I was just reading in the Acharya's books how Krishna and the gopis, they are drinking this, was it honey wine or something like that? Not Amrit, it's honey wine, it's wine. And they're getting intoxicated, and their eyes are rolling. And then you go to the lowest place in the world, and that's New Orleans. I mean, New Orleans is probably a direct perverted reflection of Goloka Vrindavan. More than anywhere else. Isn't it?
Nu Sankirtan Puri.
Isn't it? I mean, you can't think of anything lower. So, anyway, so that's a direct perverted reflection. So what's highest there is lowest here. Just try to remember that. So for someone to be a left-handed tantric is not a good idea. Because it just gets you more in the bodily conception of life. That's the point. The more you get engaged with the senses and their sense out materially, the more you get in the bodily conception of life. The more you engage your senses in spiritual objects like prasadam, the deities, atakshi krishna namadi, nabhavet, then our senses become purified, and then we can actually perceive Krishna. Raja Vijaraja Vuyam Pavicham Idamutma Pachaksha Vagamam Dharmam Pachaksha. We can directly perceive the Lord if we purify our senses. Rishikena Rishikate Shavanam Vakuruchate Sarvapati Vidinu Muktam, of all these designations. So any other questions? Yes.
Very dear Prabhupada disciple pointed this out on the web, that Prabhupada said, you or love Krishna or you love vagina. Do you know about that?
Yeah, but I'm not going to talk about that. What Prabhupada meant was love your senses. So one thing is, we want to make clear, it's not that women are to blame for men being in Maya, or men are to blame for women being in Maya. You have to take responsibility for yourself. If you're loving something or attached to something in this world, that's your fault. It's not the fault of your sense object. You know, it's not like, I mean, like I gave the example about pizza previously in class. It's not that it's pizza's fault that I'm attracted to it. You understand?
Yeah.
Don't blame the pizza.
Being pizza.
Yes, Chandrana.
What is it about gambling, Maharaj? What's the unperverted non-reflection of that?
Let me think about that for a second. Actually, Krishna plays dice games with his gopis. And there's this place at Radhakund where Krishna is gambling with Radharani. Of course, what he's gambling is like embraces and kisses. So that's a very high thing. There's this dice board at Radhakund. Anyone's been to Radhakund and seen the dice board? No? It's in Shamkund. It's right next to Radhakund. There's this place where Krishna and Radharani would play dice. And the Acharyas talk about this. The dice boards there are like, I guess, like crosses or something like that.
It's like, in between the two kunds?
No. It's, if you go... if you go from Radhakund to Shamakund, and then not between the kunds, it's not at the Sangam. If you walk down about 50 feet after you leave Radhakund, you'll see it on the road. And you have to leave the road. I mean, there's a place. It's a famous place where the dice board is. So yeah, there's gambling there. There's gambling. There's cheating. There's stealing. I mean, Krishna's doing things to make Radharani angry. I mean, it's like anger between men and women is not a nice thing in this world. You know, when a man and wife start to argue and everything, but Krishna, he likes to stimulate Radharani's anger. Sometimes he says to Srimati Radharani that your face is just like many moons. And of course, the word for many moons is Chandravali. So he says, your face is like Chandravali. Oh, and then he pauses. Oh, I made a mistake. I said, I didn't mean that word, you know. And then she gets angry. She walks off in a huff, in a puff. And she goes to this place called Gaurikund. And then, this is actually funny. Krishna, in order to see her, he has to dress up as a girl. See, even Krishna dresses in drag sometimes. So Krishna dresses up as a girl, and he goes in to see her at this place called Gaurikund, and then he actually puts on the jewelry of the deities. I mean, that, can you imagine, like, if some lady took the jewelry off the deities, it would, how big offense it would be. So he puts on the jewelry of the deity, so he actually looks like the deity Gauri, because he's wearing her jewelry and clothes at that particular point. So then who walks in but Abhimanyu and Jatila, you know, the so-called husband and mother-in-law, Srimati Radharani. And they think they're going to catch Radharani and Krishna in one of their affairs, because they've already seen that Radharani's pet peacock is outside, and Krishna's and Radharani's deer is outside. And so that she walks in, or they walk in, and what they see, because Radharani faints when she sees them, what they see is Radharani offering dandavats at Krishna's feet, but they think Krishna is the deity Gauri, so they think the deity has come out of the deity form, and Radharani is just offering obeisances to the deity. So in this way, they don't get caught. I mean, there's more to the story, like Krishna as the deity starts speaking and threatening Abhimanyu, saying that unless you trust Radharani, you're going to die immediately. And so Abhimanyu says, all right, I trust her. I will never think that she's having an affair with Krishna again. And then they leave, and then Krishna and Radharani are having their affair inside the temple, the Gauri temple. It's a famous story. It's told by Rupa Goswami. This is in the Vidagdha Madhava, this story. So many stories like that, where when Krishna's cheating, he's making believe he's a tax collector. That's called, in the Dada Kelly comedy, where Krishna's making believe he's a tax collector and then demanding taxes from Radharani, and then he's so romantic. Actually, Krishna's the most romantic person. He says, for your beautiful eyes, you have to give so much gold. And he goes through different parts of her body saying, for this, you have to give that much jewelry and that much diamonds. So you find all these things there in the spiritual realm. Yeah, gambling, everything. Everything is there, but it's just not even, you know, killing is there. Well, not in the spiritual world, but when Krishna comes to the material world, there's killing of the demons. Because this is the direct rasa is being flavored by the indirect rasa. We talked about this, about Lord Nrisimhadeva's appearance, that you have the indirect rasa of chivalry and ghastliness being manifested with Lord Nrisimhadeva killing Hiranyakashipu. You understand? You have the 7 indirect rasas as well as the 5 direct rasas. Mm-hmm. So, any other questions or comments? Or problems? Or issues? We got to control our senses. Yeah?
Just, Maharaj, when you're talking about, you know, the concept of poison in the beginning, nectar in the end, I saw a film that was showing how psychologists, they put kids in a room and someone would come in and there was like a little bowl of M&M's or Cheerios or something. Mm. M&M's probably, and they would tell the kids, I'm going to go out of the room, and if you wait until I come back, which was like just a really short time, like 2 or 3 minutes, the kids were like 3 and 4 years old, then you can have, you know, this many M5, M&Ms, whatever. And then when the person would go out, the kids would, you could see them just like agonizing. And hardly any of them could do that, wait, and then get like the payoff.
Hmm.
They would just start, like, you know, eating the M&M's. So, but then later, like years later, they in the study they analyzed it, and the kids that were actually able to wait, they excelled in school. They were emotionally well adjusted. They had, you know, so many qualities that, you know, were advantageous in life because they were at such a young age just able to control themselves.
Yeah, that's very interesting. That's, yeah, delaying gratification is very important. Even materially, it's important. I mean, even when one becomes successful businessman or something, you have to delay your gratification, what to speak of spiritually. But Krishna consciousness is so nice, Kevalananda Kanda. It's actually nice in the beginning. But sometimes we forget, by the influence of Maya, we forget how nice it is and we become attracted to sense objects. And then we become covered. And then we become miserable. And then we come back to Krishna consciousness after that. It's like a yo-yo. You know what a yo-yo is? We go down, we come up, we go down, we come up. We forget, we remember, we forget, we remember. But ultimately, we stay up. There was this thing with the yo-yo. What's it called? Walking the dog. Did you ever do that when you were young? When you stay down. That means you become a dog. You understand? Walking the dog. You have these sleeper yo-yos. You throw down and it stays down. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah,
it's like you're walking. Yeah, look, walking the dog. So if you stay down and don't come up to Krishna consciousness, you're like a dog. And you're being walked by Maya. All right, on that happy note, we should end the class. All glories is divine grace. Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, God.